From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nicole Ogrisco with the news on this day in Maine, Monday, April 7th, 2025. Maine's Attorney General is suing the Trump administration over its recent decision to freeze federal funding to educational programs in the state. Kevin Miller has more.
Agriculture Secretary Brooke Rollins informed Maine Governor Janet Mills of the federal funding freeze on Friday, saying that Maine had violated Title IX by allowing transgender athletes to compete in girls' sports. But in a federal lawsuit filed Monday, Attorney General Aaron Fry says the U.S. Department of Agriculture did not follow any of the procedures needed to cut off funding. Fry says the agency never conducted its own investigation, notified the state, or reported its findings to Congress. Rollins had written that the funding freeze would not impact federal food assistance programs. But Fry says that one day after Rollins' letter, staff in the Child Nutrition Program were unable to access several sources of federal funding. And Fry accused Rollins of, quote, sounding more like a hostage taker seeking a ransom payment than a cabinet-level federal official. The Attorney General's office is asking a federal judge to temporarily block the USDA's attempts to cut off funding. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Kevin Miller.
A Superior Court justice today said she believes a state commission has made progress in solving chronic problems in its indigent legal defense system, but did not issue a finding in the court challenge brought by the American Civil Liberties Union of Maine. And now that the state has appealed the case to the state Supreme Court, questions are being raised about the fate of some criminal defendants who have been waiting weeks for legal representation. Caitlin Badayan has more.
Kennebec County Superior Court Justice Michaela Murphy is in the process of deciding whether the Maine Commission on Public Defense Services has made sufficient progress in providing attorneys to criminal defendants who cannot afford them. The commission filed a report last week outlining a plan to reduce the backlog of cases, and Murphy says she's happy to see that a number of steps have already been taken.
So I just want to say that I very much appreciate the plan that was filed. It certainly appears on the face of it that progress has been made in finding counsel for people who were on the spreadsheet denoted as in custody as of the date of the hearing.
In a court order last month, Murphy ruled that if the commission failed to provide a workable plan, she would order criminal defendants who've waited more than 2 weeks for an attorney to be released from jail starting this month. And if a defendant is without counsel for more than 60 days, the charges against them will be dropped. But the commission and the state of Maine have since appealed that ruling to the state Supreme Court, leaving Murphy to decide whether to enforce her order while the appeal is still pending. Carol Garvin is an attorney for the ACLU of Maine, which filed the lawsuit against the state more than 2 years ago. She says defendants should not have to wait for the appeal.
And this court has the authority, and it really, given the urgency of the situation, we think it would be very harmful for all of the subclass members to put everything on hold pending an appeal.
Attorneys for the commission and the state argue that Murphy's order should not go forward until the Supreme Court decides the appeal. If it is enforced, defendants who have been held for more than 2 weeks will have individual hearings on their situation, which has raised some logistical concerns for sheriff's departments around the state. They say they may not have the staffing or vehicles to bring defendants to different courts, and requested that Murphy consider holding the hearings over Zoom, which she says she would be open to.
I am very aware of the limitations of the resources within amongst the counties, and I will certainly do everything possible. If it means I'm driving a lot and the sheriffs are not, I am prepared to do that.
As for the commission's report, Garvin says while progress has been made in the last month finding defendants' legal representation, it's not clear whether the system has been improved to meet ongoing needs. Murphy says she will take all arguments into consideration as she considers a ruling on the issue. The Supreme Court has not yet scheduled oral arguments for the appeal. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Caitlin Badayan.
A rule banning the sale of products containing toxic PFAS compounds has been approved by the Maine Board of Environmental Protection. Cookware, cleaners, cosmetics, and ski wax are among products with intentionally added PFAS that will be illegal to sell starting next year. But companies can ask for a temporary exemption before the prohibition kicks in. The ban will expand to nearly all products by 2032. State lawmakers today considered two bills that would scale back vaccine requirements. One would remove vaccination requirements for children to attend school. Another would restore religious exemptions for school-aged children and healthcare workers. Patty White reports.
The Maine legislature eliminated religious exemptions for vaccinations in 2019, and voters overwhelmingly supported the change in a referendum the following year. But Don Murray, who has five daughters, says the law unfairly excludes children from school.
Our family has been shunned and ostracized from both community and society simply because of our beliefs. In a world that promotes the acceptance of all differences, my children are being denied the same opportunities as others in Maine.
But several medical providers told lawmakers that weakening vaccine requirements will put children in harm's way. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
Scientists at the Maine Health Institute of Research say the Trump administration has cut $250,000 in annual grant funding because of previous research on vaccine hesitancy. Dr. Cliff Rosen, a senior scientist at the Institute, says the funding, which was supposed to continue for two more years, supported building research infrastructure in Maine.
I would ask them to tell us why this vaccine hesitancy during the time of the pandemic has anything to do with us training young scientists in fields that are relevant for our state.
Rosen says the cuts have terminated several projects, including research into the health effects of wood smoke and the use of cell phones to help detect heart issues. What do a farmer, a food bank director, and a Republican state senator all have in common? They're among those sounding the alarm about a proposal in Congress to cut between 20 and 30% from the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, known as SNAP. In Maine, 174,000 people rely on it for food every month. But if the reduction is approved, advocates say food insecurity will rise and Maine's rural economy will suffer. Susan Sharon has more.
It's not often that a press conference is called in western Maine, let alone at a farmer's market. But on Saturday, the director of the state's largest food bank joined other food providers and local leaders in Bridgeton to speak out.
I come here today to say to the politicians in Washington, D.C., remember the people who elected you. Don't turn your backs on rural Americans.
Rick Bennett is a Republican state senator from Oxford. In his county, 16% of residents rely on SNAP, including nearly 3,300 children. The proposal under consideration would cut $230 billion nationally from SNAP over 10 years. And with a looming state budget deficit, rising food prices, and economic uncertainty, Bennett says policymakers need to understand that the stakes are high.
Don't be cavalier with the health and safety of Maine families. Stop the disruption and the chaos. Give people in difficult times a hand up. Embrace kindness and compassion.
According to the Maine Federation of Farmers Markets, most SNAP recipients are families with at least one person working. But some are also older residents, children, and about 6,000 veterans. And advocates say the proposed SNAP curtailment couldn't come at a worse time.
This is our produce, and this is what we've got.
At the Harrison Food Bank, the largest food bank in the state, Executive Director Sandy Sweat shows the dwindling food supplies in her cooler and on her shelves.
Not one bit of fruit came in last week. This was empty. This was empty. There were no, usually there's pallets of potatoes, you know, in the winter, root vegetables pallet, nothing.
Sweat, who provides food to 1,000 households every week, says other recent federal cuts are already affecting her operation.
I have 50 volunteers, and we're heartbroken right now because we just don't have the food to pass out.
Sweat says they used to have two large boxes filled with meat, cheese, yogurt, pre-made sandwiches, and fresh vegetables and fruit. But now they're only able to give families one box, and meat, produce, and other premium items are few and far between.
Without the SNAP benefits, we're just going to be hit harder. And what are we going to do?
It's a question that farmers are also asking. Inside the Bridgeton Farmers Market, products like eggs, meat, vegetables, and herbs are for sale from local farmers. And Brittany Strange is able to use her SNAP benefits and something called Harvest Bucks to pay them directly for what she needs.
One year during when they were giving us extra benefits during COVID and all that, we had enough we could actually buy half a pig, and that was amazing. Mm-hmm. It really filled our freezer. That was such a blessing.
Strange says she's also able to use SNAP to purchase seedlings from a local farmer and then plants them in her vegetable garden. And that farmer, Brenneme Guggens of Patch Farm in Denmark, says she in turn relies on customers like Strange. The Bridgeton Farmers Market has been accepting SNAP since 2014. And Guggens says her farm has seen a 400% increase in SNAP use during that time.
That's just an amazing thing to me to see the growth that this program has had in this area for just about 10 years. Over those years, we have built a network of farmers and support to be able to offer fresh local foods to the customers in our community.
According to the Maine Federation of Farmers Markets, 400 farms directly benefit from SNAP spending. And it's not just farms. They say every $1 in SNAP-related spending generates $1.50 or more in local economic activity, agriculture, food production, and even retail sales. State Senator Rick Bennett says in rural Oxford County, 60 retailers rely on SNAP. And he says his concern is that the hard-working people of his district will be forgotten. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Susan Sharon.
State lawmakers are once again debating whether Maine's three constitutional officers should be chosen by the legislature or by voters. Maine is the only state in the nation where lawmakers elect the attorney general. It is also among a minority of states that use the same process to select the treasurer and secretary of state. Representative Billy Bob Fockingham of Winter Harbor, who is the Republican leader in the House, argues that allowing voters to choose could lead to fewer partisan constitutional officers.
They would be accountable to the people of Maine. And I think we'd really find some more moderate candidates, which I really truly believe is where most of the people in Maine sort of sit in that camp.
Voters would have to amend the state constitution to change the selection process. Senator Angus King has introduced a bipartisan bill aimed at making it easier for international students with STEM degrees to stay in the U.S. after graduating. He says the goal is to bolster the country's science and technology workforce.
Keep that talent here rather than educating them here and then sending them somewhere else to start their businesses.
King says the bill would open up more green cards to STEM graduates with job offers in the U.S., and allow university students enrolled in STEM programs to apply for a green card while still in school. He says the bill also protects American workers by requiring employers to first recruit U.S.-born workers. The bill has received backing from a wide range of labor and educational groups. For transgender and non-binary people, getting a passport and other identity documents to reflect their gender identity can be a complex process. It's been made more difficult and in some cases impossible since President Trump took office. In Maine, individuals can still get IDs and birth certificates to reflect their gender identity. But as Esther Pratt Kylie reports, many are confused about how they align with new federal requirements and whether it's safe for them to travel.
In January, the State Department announced that it would no longer issue X gender markers on passports or allow transgender Americans to update their passports with their gender identity. Shortly after that, Leo Goddard called the Franklin County Probate Court with a simple question.
I stumbled over my words when I called and I was like, I don't know any other way to phrase this. Can trans people even get their passports anymore? Like, are trans people allowed to get passports?
He didn't get a clear answer. Goddard lives in Farmington and has X as the gender marker on his passport, something the Biden administration allowed beginning in 2022.
It relates more to how I feel about gender and myself. I identify as transmasculine. Usually I just tell people I'm a man, but when I'm with my community, I'm usually closer to non-binary.
Goddard was already nervous about harassment and discrimination, but now he says he fears for his safety the next time he travels, even within the United States.
It feels like there's a target on my back almost anywhere I go.
The State Department has clarified that all current passports with X gender markers are still valid. But it's left transgender people unsure of their ability to get accurate or updated documents now or in the future. Maine is one of 22 states that allow a person to select X as their gender marker on state IDs like driver's licenses. Parents can also select X on their child's birth certificate. And Mainers have the option to amend their own birth certificate to align with their gender identity. But Maine Secretary of State Shenna Bellows says the discrepancy between state and federal law has caused some confusion.
I have certainly heard from transgender Mainers who are feeling targeted by the federal government now. We have seen folks reaching out to us to understand if Maine law had changed after President Trump issued the latest executive order on this issue. And the short answer is no. Only Congress and state legislatures can change the law.
Bellows says Maine will continue to offer the gender marker X, and individuals can still change their gender marker on state ID or driver's licenses. She says this applies to Real ID too, which domestic air travelers will need to fly beginning May 7th. But there is still a lot of uncertainty for people like Becky Wartell and her spouse, who selected X on their child's birth certificate.
I thought it was doing something that would make it easier for my kid and, you know, show her that I love her no matter who she ends up being, and that I want her to have all the options in the world.
They have a friend's wedding coming up later this year abroad, so they need to get a passport for their 17-month-old.
Whatever the marker is on the passport needs to match what's on the birth certificate, and also that it needs to be M or F. And so it being that her birth certificate says X, M or F don't match her birth certificate. So we're not sure that she's even going to be able to get a passport.
Wartell says they have an appointment to apply for a passport later this month.
It feels scary right now as a queer family to not be able to leave the country if we needed to.
I've heard from trans people who have applied and who have had all of their documents aligning and have still gotten their passport back with the wrong gender marker.
Maine Transnet Executive Director Bree Danvers-Kidman says they have heard from people in Maine and beyond who have had a range of experiences with passport office employees, many of whom are not sure how to interpret the policy.
I've heard from other people about their application simply being rejected and mailed back with the other passport voided. I've heard about people sending in their applications with original documents that came back shredded. I have heard from a cisgender woman who had her passport application rejected and got a letter saying that her application was corrected because of inconsistencies with her gender marker. And like they wanted her to apply as a man.
The ACLU has filed suit against the Trump administration over the gender marker passport policy. ACLU attorney Shruti Swaminathan says there is real danger in using identification that doesn't match a traveler's gender identity.
Now you have, you know, trans men having an F stamp on their passport. They look nothing like an F sex designation. They don't identify with that designation at all. And it's even more confusing for TSA and CBP and other officers who are, you know, pulling these folks out of line to be like, is this a fraudulent document that you're showing me? Like this doesn't seem to match who you are at all.
The ACLU is seeking a preliminary injunction, which would put the policy on hold while the case plays out in court. A judge heard arguments on March 25th and is expected to rule on the injunction any day. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Asta Pratt-Kiley.
And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. Coming up on Maine Calling at 11 o'clock tomorrow morning, artificial intelligence and your privacy. I'm Nicole Ugrisco. Thanks for listening.